Welcome to Church in the North, podcast by ministry leaders and for ministry leaders. I'm your host, Rob Chartrand, program coordinator for Christian ministry at Briarcrest College. And I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dresser, assistant professor of worship arts. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Rob.
And our guest host, AJ Crocker, vice president of external relations at Briarcrest. Good morning, AJ.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, good to have you here on Church in the North for the first time.
First time. I've been waiting a long time to be featured.
Yeah.
I'm just so thankful to be here today.
Long time fan, waiting in the wings.
From the beginning.
Awesome. Hey, it's a frosty morning here in Cairnport, Saskatchewan, and you know, we're starting to get hoar frost on the trees, H-O-A-R frost hanging on the trees and looking beautiful out there, like a winter paradise.
Thanks for clarifying that, Rob. That's helpful.
Just in case I get emails, yes. But the weather's been warming up across our country. According to the Weather Network, I read this last night, get this, it is a January thaw nationwide January thaw. So I think I looked at the upcoming next 10 days and it's going to be somewhere between 5 and 10 degrees. So, you know, I'm thinking about the snow outside that we barely got. It's going to be gone. It's going to be absolutely gone. I'm going to have my bike out. I'm going to be riding it around the city. So what's your guys' prediction? Let's do like a preemptive Groundhog Day in January. What do you guys think? Is the weather here to stay, the warm weather, or is this just like a short breather? AJ, you're up, man. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it'll be a nice January. I think February we'll get used to it. And by mid-February, we'll have some nasty storm again. But then it'll probably dissipate and we'll have a nice March.
Right. That's so like God's playing games with our heart?
Absolutely. Just one more test. One more test in this wilderness before
Jeff,
spring.
Jeff, do you agree?
I think this is a... this is a feint by Old Man Winter, and he's coming around with a left hook that we are not going to be ready for.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, last year was crazy, and this winter, like, it's like, I don't know, this week is like, this year is like absolutely the opposite of last year. It doesn't make any sense. I won't make any comments about climate change. These past few days at Briarcrest, we've been hosting a special event, the Go Conference, that's a student event, like a student led. It's for students. Yesterday, though, I mean, they had this time of prayer, and they invited students who feel called to go. So the idea behind Go, of course, is mission, not just missions, but being on mission in the world. And there's a huge response from students, which was, I mean, so awesome to see. A bunch of them came forward for prayer, I think it's especially great to see something like that, especially in a day where we're seeing kind of a shortage of ministry leaders across the country, in all denominations, all across the board. I mean, even in my own denomination, I heard the stat a few years ago, they anticipated in the next 10 years, 50% of lead pastors will retire. And where are they going to come from? Where are we going to find pastors for these churches? So I want to hear from you guys. Jeff, what do you think we're seeing a drop in the number of ministry leaders?
Yeah, that is a great question. I think, again, I mentioned this in our pre-show conversation. I don't have any peer-reviewed studies to back this up, but I feel like that, like when I grew up in church, we had a missions conference every year at the church, and there was and we were challenged as young people to seriously give thought to overseas missions or to vocational ministry. But as sort of the seeker movement or the seeker sensitive movement, you know, gained traction in a lot of our evangelical churches, the focus shifted away from that, and it was more that we were expecting people coming on a Sunday morning who had not even made an initial decision to give their lives to Jesus, and that missions turned more into, well, that's your friends and neighbors around here,
right.
And that conversation of a call to vocational ministry, well, that was sort of more advanced, like, and we're not, you know, the people we're trying to reach aren't ready for that, and so it seems to have been put on the back burner and just left there.
So you're saying like Sunday morning was influenced for so many churches, and it moved away from, say, being a sending culture to be more in an invitational, attractional culture.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a trend that I've seen.
Yeah, AJ, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think when I think about what happened yesterday with our students, it's a full day of prayer. Like, it's a day where we've cleared the deck. There's no academics, there's no other rhythms.
Yeah.
The practices are kind of like, it is just sit in. And the way that we enter into a day or a season like that helps shape our expectations for what the Lord might do. And so for our kids that come into churches, like Jeff was saying, that where we are focused on our here and now and my relationship with Jesus and how that affects me, the circle around me. No one's showing up to Sunday morning or in my opinion, not many people are showing up to Sunday morning with an expectation of being of their paradigm of the rest of their lives or what the Great Commission looks like in their lives to be shattered.
Yeah.
We're going to feel better, to be challenged in our own walk. We're, you know, the way that we enter in and approach, a service or an event like that, I think, shapes it. I also think that, you know, as I've worked with young adults plenty in the last 15 years here, it takes a fair bit of relationship and trust to get to a point where I'm saying, hey, you are really good at this.
Right.
And
right.
you should think about this as a career. And it's not a great career by worldly standards.
Yeah.
It is a career that the kingdom, where the kingdom will be built and where you can contribute in significant ways. And even here at Briarcrest, when I'm working with these young adults within their degree or post-degree, it takes quite a while of relationship and mentorship before I feel like I could really push there,
right,
without them just fleeing the conversation and then it breaking our relationship. So I wonder about the nature of a pastor's ability to advocate in a student's life, the trust level between a church staff member and parents and a family,
right,
in identifying a 16 or 17 year old who really should be thinking about vocational ministry, and yet has top marks in their math and has a direct route to engineering.
Right. Yeah. Andrew Root wrote a great book a number of years ago, and I just read it this summer. It's called The End of Youth Ministry? And in the book, he talks about why youth ministries are no longer a priority for families, or they're seen differently and viewed differently. And he addresses a couple of cultural realities. I mean, one of them is safetyism, the rise of safetyism. And Jonathan Haidt talks about this in his book, The Coddling of the American Mind. And he talks about how, like, our parenting strategies have so changed, right? We're bubble wrapping our kids. We're putting them in hockey helmets and sending them off to play duck, duck, goose because we're worried they're going to get hammered, right? So, I mean, we're hovering and snow plowing our kids, and you know, all of that. So, safety. The other issue is one of security. I mean, so security in our culture is one of the highest values. I mean, we talk about the economy all the time. We talk about kids being able to get jobs, right? And with the cost of rising Christian education, including, you know, pastoral training, parents are concerned about that. So, you know, if you're thinking about the future of your kids, pastoral ministry doesn't seem like it would be very high on the bar. Like, I mean, because it's not always safe. It's not always secure. Although, you know what? God always provides. He's always provided for me. I don't know about you, Jeff. Like, and I think all the ministry leaders can say that. I'm well fed. I'm well cared for. I'm well housed. I have vehicles. You know, it's God's been good to me over the course of my ministry. But those are the concerns, right? And sometimes safety and security, as our highest values, can be antithetical to the gospel. Because, boy, what if we told Jesus, well, be safe out there and do whatever you can to secure your life? You know, where would we be today? So what do you guys think? Like, should we be keep on asking people to consider if they're called to ministry? I mean, that seems, is that like a practice that's kind of gotten out of date? Any thoughts on that, Jeff? How about you?
Yeah, I don't think so. And if I could just back up a couple minutes to share
back
a story
up.
Of my call to ministry. I was the kid with good grades in math, and so I did an engineering degree in undergrad and worked there for 10 years. And then God very clearly called me into worship ministry. And when I was making that change, and I mean, the worst career move ever, like I got a 50% pay cut, like, way to go. Good job.
That's secure.
But I remember thinking, well, God, you know, my wife and I, we love to travel, but I guess we just won't be able to do that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And but I guess I'm getting some crowns in heaven, you know, over this. I'm feeling good about this this noble sacrifice I'm making. But within a couple of years, I was to Europe twice on mission trips and been to Africa a couple times, and I've traveled way more since I got into ministry. And so that just reminds me how, where I thought I was signing up for this, you know, it's good, I'm not going to make much money, it's going to be lots of drudgery, but it's been such a great adventure that, man, I have zero regrets of leaving, you know, my walking into that little fabric covered cubicle and coding for 8 hours. I mean, that was the drudgery.
Good times. Good times. Yeah. Not my idea of a good day at all. AJ, any thoughts about why we keep asking people, whether or not we should keep asking people to be, consider if they're called?
My head goes to the system that gets you to that moment again. Like I for myself, you know, my dad pushed me into just serving at camp for the summer instead of working to buy a car, or instead of working to save, or instead of being in six hockey camps to make that next team. And I think you know, the level of club sport and of elite opportunity that really, as a, you know, a parent of an 11-year-old, I know the opportunities that Brooklyn has in dance or in soccer, even in Moose Jaw, where we could just zero in and her whole life could be these things. Creating this really practical and not uber sinful, but this idol in her life that'll distract her from it. And if that keeps her from opportunities that expose her to what ministry feels like and the impact that where the Lord can use her, well, I think that's on me a bit for not prioritizing those kinds of experience for her. So I think we absolutely should. I just don't think you take a kid out of a AAA hockey camp and then go, hey, you want to be a pastor?
Right.
I think it's a matter of
it's a nurturing over time.
My kindergarten values, daughter goes every other day, and then she goes full days, and then she gets into more advanced stuff as the school system goes on. And if we don't have that in our youth ministries, through junior high, through senior high, it's really hard to actually ask that question, and call them into ministry when they're 18, 19, when their whole last 8 years has been about something else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know a lot of, a number of ministries and churches that are saying, if we need to raise up future leaders, we need to start talking to them in like grade nine, not once they graduate. Like they need to roll back the clock and start identifying those gifts and callings, even earlier on in a person's life.
If I could pause for a short commercial, that's why we duplicated Youthquake and added a junior high event, because we knew that by the time grade 9, 10 rolled around, a lot of kids had left youth group. And if we could give them this mountaintop experience, this cornerstone experience earlier, maybe that they would stay through that grade 8, grade 9 transition in their youth ministries and be able to carry on in with their youth pastors.
Yeah.
But that getting, capturing the heart and the mind of students earlier in grade 6, 7, 8, so vital to being able to ask that question later on.
Yeah. I have a hunch, and I don't know, I can't, as you would say, there's no peer-reviewed study on this, Jeff, but I've had a lot of conversations with ministry leaders, and I've been in the game for about 30 years here, and I seem to think that there's a trend in churches among pastors where we're no longer calling out that that gifting in young people, or we're no longer inviting young people to prayerfully consider whether or not the Lord has called them into ministry. And so many, you know, so much of that calling is wrapped up in people we greatly respect identifying that gift in us, right? Yeah. So fanning that into flame. So I know that camps do it. I know that youth groups do it. I know that churches do it. Like, and when they do it, those are like the major contributing factors to a young person considering ministry. But if they're not doing it, well, then that's a bit of a challenge. So any thoughts? Like, am I wrong, Jeff? Do you think I'm crazy? Like, are we not? Is everybody doing it, or am I missing it?
In my experience, I remember being affirmed, you know, in my ministry roles as a volunteer when I was, excuse me, in high school.
Yeah.
And I also remember meeting my youth pastor when I was in first year engineering.
Yeah.
And the youth pastor told me, I don't know if he should have done this or not, but he told me, you know, I was really disappointed that you did not go into Bible college.
Hmm.
And that, like, That wrecked me because that at a time, like engineering school was not going great at that at that moment when he said that to me. And but I do feel like there's a sense that maybe we've lost our nerve as ministry leaders and are afraid of you know, freaking someone out or freaking out their parents,
going against the parents
if if we tell them, hey, I've got a, you know, a great career for you, the pay is crappy and it's, like it's not secure. And but but I think we need to do it. And I mean, I appreciate what AJ said about that, having a relationship and building that relationship and building the trust to be able to call someone into that. And I think that is important. And I think that there is value. Like if I see ministry giftings in a, say, a student here and I don't know them that well, I'm going to tell them that and say, hey, this is something, I just see this in you. You should give this some thought. Because I think, you know, my own call into ministry was a combination of those things.
Right.
And there were people who were walking with me and knew me very well. And then there were people who hardly knew me at all who were saying, you should be a worship pastor. And so those things together, you know, they all work together and they're hard to ignore when you're getting all of these different sort of data points that are reinforcing this call into ministry.
AJ, any thoughts on that?
I'd say similar to Jeff's experience. We would know that about 51% of our students first hear about Briarcrest through a parent or a family member or a current Briarcrest student, so friends or family. Only 5% over the last 7 years on average have said a pastor told them. And that's there's lots to unpack there in a different time. But the referral, the speaking into someone's life, the should we, I just think there's so much happening within the church that we're not, I think there's a deep power in speaking into someone's life to say, you really should go, instead of jumping in 2 years into engineering school and saying, I wish you would have. And yet the courage to do so, I'm not sure if we need to fan that flame of courage within our young pastors and the people that we're training to really advocate and call people, be bold and to call that into their lives. I absolutely think we should, but that's what comes to mind for me is that it is happening from, you know, from my viewpoint, from our data, it is happening from the family and the friend level, the peer level, into biblical study anyway, at a place like this. And yet we don't necessarily see it from a church standpoint.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I wonder if it's a course correction and the pendulum has swung too far in one direction. I can remember a day where we would invite all of the students going off to Bible college up on stage on a Sunday morning, and we'd pray for them and God teach them and lead them. And then they go off the stage, and then we wouldn't invite up the kids that are going off to university, which is, how nuts is that, right? they probably need our prayers more than the other ones, right? And so we've seen in our, you know, in the last few decades, the elevation of the priesthood of all believers, this idea, right, is that everybody's a minister, and that's important value. And we need that, you know, especially if we think of churches needing to grow and multiply and, you know, reach the world. But we've also seen an elevation of the idea of all vocation as being holy and sanctified, which is true. Like, that's true. Don't deny that. But we've elevated those, but it seems like we've missed this idea that, yes, all vocations are holy and good, but there is a uniqueness to the vocation of ministry. There's a unique calling there that needs to be called out and elevated. Not that it's more important or anything like that. All vocations are good, but elevated in the sense of it needs to be talked about and it needs to be pursued and considered in the life of our churches. So it feels like the pendulum has swung all the way this other way, and we've kind of lost sight of that. Your thoughts on that? Is that, am I crazy? Jeff, you're grinning here.
I remember exactly a conversation in my house about how I did not get prayed for because I was off to engineering at Waterloo.
At the evil university.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also remember there were some, you know, just rudderless kids in my youth group who didn't know what to do after high school. But when they said, well, maybe I'll go to Bible college, and then bing, bing, like all these lights go off and they get all this affirmation.
Right.
And so off they went to Bible college. And I mean, I could think of a couple of them who it did not turn out well.
Right, right. Because it wasn't their calling or it wasn't their gift.
Yeah, it wasn't their calling, but it was, I mean, suddenly there was this, you know, there was this system set up that provided all this affirmation that they hadn't experienced anywhere else. Yeah. And yet, I mean, I mean, maybe that's still a great thing because, I mean, at least they got they went for a year or whatever of being in a Christian community and learning, like however it worked out. Yeah. I mean, that is a great thing, and God is not going to waste that
for all students for sure. Yeah,
but I do think, I mean, maybe there could have been a little more discernment going on.
Yeah,
in some of those cases, but
So what ends up happening is then Christian ministry becomes like the default. If you don't know what you're going to do, well, you might as well, go do Christian ministry then, right?
Yeah, you got lots of personality.
Yeah. So like, why ask the Christian? Why are you here? Because I couldn't get into engineering. That's why I'm here.
Well, for our ministry leaders who are out there. We hope that you would courageously invite young people to consider whether or not they're called into ministry. That's it. I mean, and that your church would reinforce their ability to be in ministry now, like to live it out, to serve and to be part of your local body, but also to consider how we do this. Because I mean, we do have a challenge across our nation. We have a challenge of raising up leaders. And so we're not saying that the Bible school model is the only way, but it is a significant way that we can do that. And I know that a lot of local churches have their own internal ways of doing it as well, which is fantastic. We're seeing new models and new ingenuity and ways that we can raise up future pastors and leaders. And we got to all do it together, but invite them, consider, tap some shoulders, call it out. We hope. Well, this week on the podcast, we are going to have two guests, Daryl Molyneux and Johnny Thiessen, and they are from Send Network Calgary. And Send is a church multiplication network that's planting churches in the United States and in Canada. And I think it's going to be a challenging and inspiring conversation because they're actually both here speaking at the Go Conference today. Well, Jeff, AJ, thanks for joining me this morning on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Well, hey, I'm so excited to have with us Daryl Molyneux and Johnny Thiessen, both from Send Network Calgary. Guys, welcome to Church in the North.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be here.
Great to be here, Rob.
All right, let's get started. Why don't you guys both tell us, what is your job title? And then what does each of you do all day? Like, what does that job title mean? Johnny, let's start with you.
Okay, job title, Church Plant Catalyst. So my job is to discover, develop, and deploy church planters.
Okay.
What I do all day, my kids will say, all you do is have two coffees and a lunch. So just a lot of meetings, a lot of coaching. The best thing I get to do is just to meet with potential church planters, encourage them, cause them to dream, and then just ask what God's doing in their life.
Okay.
And being able to simply pray with them and walk alongside them as God calls them.
Yeah.
Whether it's to church planting, whether it's to missions, whether it's to be just a better father, better, husband, better worker, employee for who they work
okay.
for.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And church planters definitely need that.
Absolutely.
Having been a church planter. Yeah. How about you, Daryl? What do you do?
Great. My official title is Send City Missionary in Calgary, Alberta. And I look after Johnny. No, I'm just kidding. I oversee church planting for Southern Alberta, coaching, training, assessing, caring for planters. And then I primarily work with partners. So we have a lot of partner churches in the U.S. We're U.S.-based organizations, a lot of partner churches that I connect with partners, help them find church plants that they can pray for, give to, and then come and serve alongside in our city. So our planters are heavily supported by partners.
Okay. So you're working on those arrangements and relationships as well.
Eh? Yep. And I text Johnny back and forth. We hang out all day.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. You make sure he gets his two cups of coffee and lunch.
And,
lunch.
And he makes sure I get where I'm supposed to do, too. Exactly. It's a vice versa thing, so.
But, you know, a lot of our listeners hear about church plants, and they have in their mind a certain vision or idea of a church plant. I mean, what kind of church plants are we talking about here?
Well, again, we don't assess model. We don't talk about model. We talk about two things that we want to make sure each of our church plants has, and that's that we want to be, all of our plants have to be about the word and prayer. Hmm. And so we want, when people come to a Send Network church plant, they know that the word is preached.
Yeah.
And that people are praying.
Okay.
You're teaching people how to pray. And so model, whether it's co-vocational, bivocational, whether it's home church, whether it's launch big, you know, large model, whatever, as long as Jesus okay. is lifted up.
Okay.
And people are praying and growing deeper with Jesus.
Okay. So like the standard Sunday morning launch model, you do that. Micro church models, neighborhood missional models, all of that.
All of that. Our main focus is we don't want to just start services. We want to push back darkness and engage the city, make disciples, plant churches. And okay. so that's comes from our boss, Vance. But what we don't want to do is gather Christians. We want to help our planters engage their communities, figure out the rhythms of their communities, figure out who's in their communities, how can they meet them, but then engage them with the gospel. And out of that, we're hoping to start Bible studies in basements, which is going to grow to maybe another Bible study in their basement, or maybe it's rent a church facility and start a church through gospel movement, not programmatic right. Christianity that yeah. we would typically know in North America.
Yeah, but to be clear, they can plant, like it doesn't have to be in a basement. It could be on the second floor. Is that
basement's way better.
Because there yeah. was an upper room at one time. Yeah. I mean,
the garage.
And somebody fell out of the upper room window, don't forget.
That's so right.
We don't want that.
This is a little sleepy.
It's a bad preaching.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so talk to me about where is Send planting churches in Canada? Is it just in Calgary or beyond that?
Yeah, so North American Mission Board, which is our base, yeah. Has identified 32 Send cities in North America. And so there's yeah. five in Canada, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, and Montreal. But we're also planting across the board. So there's stuff going on in Halifax, Newfoundland, Winnipeg, but there's five Send cities that predominantly the funds and resources go to where the nations are coming to us and we're trying to engage them with the gospel.
Okay, but you guys have kind of creeped across the border here into Saskatchewan as well. What's going on with that? Is that something that you're interested in?
Well, Saskatchewan doesn't have a city of over a million people. They just got a
really?
Lot of Moose Jaw. They just got a lot of Rough Rider fans. And so, no offense, but yeah, just again, what can we do here? And so, part of one of the values of Send Network is to seek first the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And so, how can we come and bring the resources that God's blessed us with to steward those well for people here in Saskatchewan? Okay. Because they don't have it hasn't been segregated, but what Send Network has done is, hey, we want to reach out past just those cities. We want to reach out. Cities are important, but there's millions of people outside the cities, you know, yeah, in our sure. provinces. And so yeah. they've given us the mandate, hey, go for it. And so part of us being here with you is going, who else is out here? And so just making those contacts that we can begin to see what God's doing all over
yeah,
the place.
Yeah. And I mean, just so our listeners know, you guys are both here during what Briarcrest calls its Go Conference. And for us, it's a kind of a co-curricular event that our students put on for students. And it's really about firing up our students for mission, not just missions, but mission here locally and around the world. So, and Daryl, of course, you spoke this morning at our chapel, the last event of that, and did a great job. And so you're here for that. And I'm going to pull you guys into one of my classes tomorrow on evangelism. So I'm so stoked that you guys are here. But you're also here talking about church planting.
Yeah, can I ask one thing? So we're also in Saskatchewan. We're part of the Canadian National Baptist Convention,
yeah.
which is the Canadian version of Southern Baptist.
Yeah.
And really, our movement started in Saskatchewan with Henry Blackaby and Experiencing God and the revivals in Saskatchewan. And so, interesting enough, we started here, but there's really not a ton happening in church planting. So we're trying to re-engage that as well in this yeah. process. Because like Johnny said, people need Jesus, whether you're in a city, rural community. We all need Christ, right? So how do we re-engage where we started with
right.
the, yeah. the gospel?
Yeah, and Blackaby is certainly a familiar name to those who are long in the tooth Baptists here in the province, experiencing
sure.
God and all of that, making a great impact for that for Baptists. So what's going on in Calgary? Is God on the move in Calgary in church planting? You guys got a couple going on there or a few, or what's happening? Johnny?
Yeah. God's been bringing just planters to us. We've got, I wear a wristband that says Send Calgary and it says 10-2 on it, which is praying Luke 10:2 that we want to, harvest is plentiful, the workers are few, so pray to the Lord of the harvest. And so I pray. God's bringing people. So, and again, not just we want to bring people into our city, we raise up people, but it's exciting when people say, I've been called to Calgary. Hmm. We just had a couple that moved from Louisiana, just felt a call.
Louisiana.
Okay. Felt a call. And I'm like, why Canada from Louisiana? Like, it's cold here. You know that, mm-hmm. right? And they go, yeah, we thought we were going to go overseas. But when we looked at Canada, there was just something about that being a mission field and the lostness of Canada compared to Louisiana was just huge. And so they came up on several trips. We made sure that they were here in the snow and felt the cold before they came from there.
Found some good fried chicken as well.
Good fried chicken. Yeah, some
Popeyes. Gumbo. Popeyes. First delivery.
Yeah, and so they're up here. You know, he's an emergency room nurse.
Okay.
And so we said, hey, we'd love you to come up because he's working co-vocationally. Mm-hmm. We'd love you to come up, but no, don't go the pastor's route. What do you see if you can go through a secular route as a nurse? So he came up, applied to the Alberta Health. They brought him up. They paid for
it. Travel nurse? Just a nurse?
Just a nurse. Okay, so they paid for him to come up. And they paid for him all his visas, did all his immigration stuff.
Okay.
So he's up. He signed a 2-year contract. So he's now in the neighborhood, getting used to things. The government's paid for it, and he's already doing stuff. And he was in training, and he started a Bible study in the training already. Like,
wow.
Like it's really cool because he's just like, I'm just here to share the gospel because that's they're here on mission. They're not here to because they want to live in the cold. They're here because they want to see people reach for Jesus.
And it's a thing that I appreciate about your model is that you're not, you know, telling all the church planters that they have to be full-time vocational pastors at some point, right? They can be co-vocational, and you certainly encourage them to be co-vocational, right?
Yeah.
And so that creates a lot more flexibility in the model in the ways that you can plant churches because you're not dependent on the local church to pay your rent kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so currently we have about 10 church plants within the first 1 to 5 years of launch or beginning. And so we're helping them with funding and coaching them and resourcing them and doing what we can to help them. And we have about 5 or 6 that just passed that threshold. So maybe 15, but then we've just gone through our list and we have about 8 to 10 that could launch in the next 2 to 3 years.
In Calgary or in the country?
In Calgary.
Wow. Okay.
And Alberta South. So we have, these are men who've been assessed and they've got the stamp of approval. They're just trying to figure out, follow God's leading and when, where, how. And so one's already been recorded for this year. We have 3 more before probably Easter, and then we'll see where the Lord let's say the other ones lie, but our heart would be to see a gospel-centered church in every one of the 208 communities that make up Calgary. Mm. I'm not talking Baptist church or Send church. We're talking gospel-preaching church.
Right, right.
So just clarify that.
Yes, yes.
There's a lot of other denominations doing great things that we would be like, absolutely. Yeah, they're doing it. So we don't want to put churches beside other churches, but where there's communities that are like, man, there's really nothing here because communities in Calgary are going up 20,000 people and there's not any allowances for church or church facilities.
Right.
So whole communities without any gospel presence. We want to hit those communities with a church, Lord willing, that can preach the gospel and reach the nations that are coming to us. The other thing about Calgary is the nations are coming to us. So 55,000 people moved to Calgary last year, many of them from other parts of Canada, but overseas. And so when God says, go make disciples of all nations, we have to not go to India. We have to go to Tim Hortons.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sobeys and the community center. And we can engage the nations, 120 languages, 240 different ethnicities in our city.
Yeah, yeah. God's brought the nations to our door.
So are things happening? Yes. Can there be more? 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's like 3.5% of the world's population currently are living in a nation other than their own. So in other words, that's 3.5% of the world's population are on the move. They are diaspora people living as expats in another country. And that includes Canada.
Yeah, look at those significant stats coming out, Ron. Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, and you probably heard the stats. 1.2 million people came to Canada from another country last year, either as permanent residents or as students from October to October. 1.2 million.
I did not know that.
That's a huge number. Yeah. Lots of conversation about that. So, I mean, well, you guys are in this church planting world, but I mean, what do you know about church planting? You ever planted a church before? Johnny, you ever planted a church?
Yes. Yes. Two, but one really. The one we planted was, again, it was when I was in my 30s and you're kind of excited that you're going to take the world and trying to prove yourself. And, again,
I thought told me you did take the world, Johnny. Oh, yeah. I thought that's what happened. You're a conqueror and king, no?
Yeah, I thought you took it and gave it back.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, planted church in Abbotsford for 2004. It was, it was a, probably the best experience, worst experience.
Yeah. Amen.
Hardest thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
So when I sit with church planners and they go through assessments, we tell them they've passed. It's like, you wish you would have failed because it's the hardest. You're going to embark on the hardest thing you're going to do.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's the greatest spiritual warfare. Like I've been in youth ministry. I've been a lead pastor, associate pastor, camp director. But nothing is harder than being a church planter.
Yeah. The mantle is heavy.
It is,
yeah. and the pressure people. Is huge, and bless those people,
yeah.
And it's, who come it's
well said, Rob. Help. Well yeah, said. Yeah. Bless those people.
But man, there were some sweet times. We did some sweet ministry, and there was a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, but a lot of good stuff.
Get to see God do some incredible things.
Absolutely,
yeah.
People listen to a lot of bad sermons, a lot of long bad sermons
from me and you.
Yeah. Oh my goodness,
preach a lot of
longest,
dogs.
What's your longest one you've ever done?
About 50 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, I did an hour and 15 once.
Oh wow,
Johnny. Yeah. Wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. There was a kind of a famous preacher that a bunch of us were following, and his thing said that we were the long-winded Bible guys, and we were the long-winded guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Where did you plant, Daryl?
Yeah, so I also planted. Very similar, Johnny said it well. In greatest thing you've ever done, most difficult thing I've ever done. Lots of successes and failures along the way, but we planted in Niagara region of Ontario. Wow. Started in 2010.
Niagara on the lake?
No.
Oh, okay.
Hoity-toity. St. Catharines.
Okay, Catherine.
We lived in a little place called Font Hill. But planted, and God exceeded our expectations. Mm. And we prayed a prayer, God, do something in 10 years that we could look back upon and say only God did. Mm. And not knowing that we were going to be there 10 years almost to the day, and we looked back upon and said only God could do that. So we were amazed, because clearly this clown didn't do it. God did, but it was a great process, and really honored to be a part of it, and thankful that it's still going and thriving, and by God's grace alone, right? So we have planted a church in the best way we knew how, which at the time we did the best we had of what we had.
Yeah, that's right. Right? They say of church planting now, it's one of the most commodified industries in Christianity. In other words, there are so many conferences, there's so many books now, there are so many, you know, look at you guys, right? Like coaches and et cetera, that are helping with church planting now. Whereas 20 years ago, back at the bus, I mean, that some of those structures weren't in place yet. So we've learned a lot since then. And of course, our listeners know I planted Crosspoint in Edmonton in 2010 and was there for 12 years, and a wonderful church, beautiful. But it was hard. It was really hard. I'm gray today. I feel like Barack Obama, but not really. But, you know, the graying experience of Barack Obama. Yes. Not. So SEND is a branch ministry. You've already said this, of what's called North American Mission Board. And what might not be obvious from the name is that that means you are connected with this, or part of the Southern Baptists. And so you are Southern Baptists north. I mean, you guys didn't begin there, but you're working with SEND north of the border here in Canada. Why on earth are Southern Baptists interested in planting churches in Canada?
Great question, and I'll verify. We are Canadian National Baptist Convention.
Okay.
So
okay.
Good clarification.
To make that distinction, but it has been rooted in the Southern Baptist, but we are our own entity.
You're separate? There's no connection at all?
There's connection.
Okay.
But we are. Rob, come on, work with me here. We are our own entity serving Canadians, and we do have a connection with Southern Baptists, and they are very missional-minded, the Southern Baptists.
Yeah.
We love our missional Baptist brothers.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
Sisters.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
are
yeah.
Awesome.
I'm just trying
they're
to
all about
clarify
mission,
that.
Man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they're North American Mission Board, North America, International Mission Board internationally. And so they're all about missions. And so we're one of their target groups for trying to reach people with the gospel. And as you know, Canadians are ripe for the gospel. We need Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot about
before.
The state of the church in Canada that Southern Baptists are sending funds for missions here in our country.
And it goes back right to 1845 when they met in Augusta, Georgia. You know, their first decision they made.
Who met?
The Southern Baptists.
Okay, yeah.
They met when their first decision they made was to establish these two mission agencies. Mm. At that time, they were called the Foreign Mission Board and the Board of Domestic Missions. And so that's like part of who they are. Like, you can say stuff about the Southern Baptists, but man, they love mission.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
see Canada as a mission field. So one of the reasons why I joined the SEND network is I believe in church planting. I believe it's the probably the best way for a discipleship evangelism today. But I wanted to join an organization that, number one, was solid theologically. So the Baptists are BFM 2000. They're solid in what they believe.
BFM? Is that like BFF? What's BFM?
BFM is not like BF, the Best Friend Missions. No, it's
Baptist Faith Message.
Yeah. Thank you, Jared.
WWF.
WWF. Baptist Faith Message of 2000. Yeah. And so it's a really solid, pretty broad statement of faith, but it's committed to, biblical doctrines.
Yeah.
And so that's solid. And then they've got money for missions, and they put their money towards missions. Like it's crazy. They have two mission offerings a year, and they're absolutely astronomical of how much these Southern Baptists love missions, and
how much they raise and send. Yeah.
It is astronomical of how they give sacrificially for missions. And so when people, want to put down the Southern Baptist, right? Like don't. Like,
no. Well, there are brothers and sisters. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And their love for mission, love for Kenneth. Mm-hmm. So we're just blessed by having teams come up from the U.S. to help us and go, like, how can we serve?
Yeah.
And it's like, we almost got too many, and it's like, we're putting them to work, but it's a blessing that they come, as well as help support our planters. That's what Daryl does a really good job of.
Yeah, I think the point I'm trying to make is, like, when I think Southern Baptists, I think like Texas. We're a long ways from Texas, so they must have something on their hearts and minds to send.
Well, Calgary's kind of like Texas.
I get that.
But the reality is, they just see Canada as a mission field. And what I tell our American partners is, if Europe is post-Christian, Canada is nipping at its heels.
Yeah.
That resonates with them, because they want to see the gospel go forward. They want to see Christianity not decline but increase. And so let's go to the least reached people groups, and Canada's becoming one of those. One stat I read recently is all-time low 6% evangelical Christian, according to one survey. There's lots out there.
For sure.
All-time low record, 6% evangelical Christian in Canada. So that resonates with the Americans. Like, well, then let's send planters and resources, and let's help the gospel move forward. So
yeah,
really rooted in the gospel.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that stat, if you go to the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, they helped with that study, and I think it was Alpha as well that appeared in on that. So Canada, although, it's a different context and a different culture than the U.S., and we had one of your workers here, Chad McDonald, on the podcast too, and I asked him this question, though, because he had Southern Baptists moving from the States to work with him, right? Over in the Maritimes. And so, I mean, it's a different context. Have you had to make any adjustments in how you contextualize the gospel, or how do you train workers compared to maybe south of the border?
Yeah. And one of the things, great question. One of the things when we have groups that come up, they're called vision tours.
Yeah.
And there's a place in Calgary, in the Northwest Calgary, at a Costco, that we take a group there, and we overlook, there's a part of the city called Simon's Valley. Mm-hmm. And there's some 40,000 people living there.
Yeah.
And we have groups that are coming in there from Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri. And we take and we show them, here's a place of 40,000 people, mm-hmm. and there's not one evangelical church.
Right.
And there is a visceral reaction that you see in these people.
There's one of our church plants there.
Yeah. And they can.
There's now.
But when they look at this, they go, they can't even fathom it, because they come from a church, a city of, or a town of 5,000, and they've got 100 churches. Like, it's that's the mentality. So they come up, they go, they can't believe that. And so in part of what happens is, they come up and they help us do block parties, and they help us do soccer camps. And what that does is allows them to go back and go, we actually got to reach out. Like, we don't just have people come to us. We have to reach out. And so part of they help us, but we're also, I think, sending back to them, like, it's harder here in Canada, and they know that.
Yeah.
And so it allows them to go, hey, we've gained some tools. We want to try this at our church. We got to do this, because we can actually, if you actually invite the community out for a barbecue, they're going to come, and we can meet people and invite them to church. Like,
right.
Cool idea. Like, not hard. Just throw a bunch of hot dogs on, and some bouncy castles, and we got people coming out from their community that now we can begin to build relationships, and they get that, go, oh man, we can actually reach out like this too. But it gives them, it's like, oh man, this is how they have to do it, because people aren't just coming to their church because they put a sign out front.
Right.
Obviously, the reality is, Rob, that you and I both know that this Canada, people aren't waking up in Moose Jaw and Calgary going, like, ooh, where's the coolest church?
No.
Like, who's got the greatest band and the best preacher? Like, they're just not waking up doing that. And so Southern States, they don't get that, because that's, most people are waking up looking for that.
Yeah.
They're not here. So we're trying to help them see that we need to engage the city, like, make disciples and plant churches. And so we were even telling our U.S. partners, like, don't expect there's going to be a church here within 3 years or 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they think 3 to 5 years is going to be a self-funded, sustainable church.
No.
Well, we're not expecting that. And so please don't expect that, because think 10 years, because we have to get here, figure out the community, connect with people. Like, Christians don't happen overnight, and they don't pull them off trees, right? You got to invest and pray and invest and pray, and Lord willing, a couple people come to Christ, and that starts your core group.
Yeah.
So again, it's just reshaping how we think about our culture, how we think about church, how we're even going to plant a church, and even goals and expectations and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we live in a culture that's largely indifferent to the church. We're irrelevant for most, and some hostility from some. And so, you invite a person to church, they'll be like, meh, nah, not really. I'm not really interested in that. So yeah, there's a long-term cultivation of relationship that's required if you're going to be able to share the gospel to our culture. So it's a very different world that we're living in. I mean, the rise of the nuns and duns and all of these things that are changing all around us. So the strategies are definitely different. You can't assume that when you say John 3:16, people know what you're talking about. Yeah. People don't know Peter from Noah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I know when you planted, but we had a 3 year runway, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to be self-sustained in 3 years.
I kept pushing against that. I got it to 5. Yeah.
But like, so we're partners come in. It's like, you got to think 7 to 9. Like, if you actually want to evangelize people,
yeah,
you got to almost put the same metrics that you have when people are going overseas. Like, overseas 3 years and you had a Bible study and 2 gospel conversations. Well, good job. Like, but in church planting, it's like, we got to get this thing going up really quickly. And so part of what we've contextualized is the sense that this ain't going to happen overnight.
Yeah. Well, and this is where a co-vocational model can really help, right? Because then you don't have this dependency right away on church offerings and whatnot, being able to support the work. You can just work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Proclaim the gospel. Yeah. So I'm sure our listeners are probably asking this question, but like, why should we be planting churches? I mean, yeah, for sure. There are regions, you know, the size of Moose Jaw that are in Calgary that don't have a church. So, okay, we get that. But for the most part, I mean, there are a lot of churches with vacancies in the pulpit. Like, they don't have a pastor. And there's also dying churches that are looking for pastors. So, I mean, shouldn't we spend more energy just maybe revitalizing or filling the pulpits of these places rather than planting churches?
I think it's both and.
Okay.
I think it's both ends. And the president of Prairie kind of said the same thing to us when we were there.
Yeah.
And let's do both. Like, let's plant churches because we need to take more ground for the gospel.
Yeah.
And let's also work at revitalizing churches that are struggling or dying. Mm-hmm. I agree. It's not the one thing. We're not the only thing in town. We're not going to come and revolutionize this country because we're awesome. We're planting churches.
But I mean, shouldn't we like revitalize all the churches first and then plant churches?
Yeah, if we can.
I'm just kidding.
If we can, let's do it. Let's do it all at the same time, right? Let's go after it.
But I think that's what church planting does. That's the beauty of church planting is because church planting is kind of like the R&D department of the church.
Yeah.
Like, they can, like, when I have a plant, they go like, what are the rules? I go, there's the Bible. Mm-hmm. There's the rules. You know, and as Baptist faith, you know, do you agree with the Baptist faith and message? And since we're Baptists, you can't drink or be with, women that aren't your wife.
Yeah.
Other than that, the Bible is your guidebook. So go for it. And so you get guys thinking like, hey, we can do this. Like, I was sitting with a potential planter at lunch and just talking about different ideas of how he wants to reach out and what's happening. And it's like, so those guys come in, they try it, you know, maybe half the stuff works, but the half the stuff works. The other church go, look what they did. Let's try that as well.
Right.
And so they're able to do it a little more safely. And a church planner can do it because he's got no rules other than, you know, maybe Daryl and I who say we're not going to give you funding anymore and the Bible. And so, like, go for it. So
there's a lot of white space for innovation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then a lot of red and black letters that put the boundaries around
us. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I heard someone once say, I remember back in our days in church planting world, where they say the second hardest job in the church is planting a church. The hardest job is turning around a dying church.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually harder to do than planting a church. And I just think for me, I think I'm wired for church planting, but I don't know about turning around a church that's, you know, when we think of the church life cycle, if you think of it as a bell curve, you're on the other end of the bell curve and it's slipping, you know, and it's almost ready to close its doors. To turn around a church like that is, is actually super challenging. And apart from a resurrection, you know, it's near impossible, right? So sometimes churches actually just need to end their life cycle. Like they need to close their doors and to make room for new life, you know? So, I mean, that was the story of Crosspoint when we moved into our new facility. There was a congregation there that had been there for many, many years, and they, you know, they didn't have enough money to keep the doors open. It was an aging congregation. The children were gone, you know, and their membership graciously voted to close their doors and give the building back to the denomination. And then the denomination said, can you guys come in? And we did. Right. And we welcomed them with arms open wide, and they came in and they were like the best volunteers and the best grandmas and grandpas and the best givers. And were just such a great part of our congregation and invested in our DNA, our missional gospel DNA. You know, they were right in there and so involved, and it actually worked out really well. But there was a necessary death that had to happen. And we don't like to talk about that. Yeah. Right. But anyone who works in a denomination knows they are shutting down churches. Right. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would say you don't have to go and work. You don't have to try and resurrect every church. Like you need to, you know, faithfully discern, mm-hmm. God, which ones do we work at and which do we not? You know, I got on a little bit of a rabbit trail there, but I mean,
it's all good.
All that to say, I mean, there is room for church plants. We need them, yeah. You know, we need more of them.
That's actually the exact way it was told me when I was discerning whether I was going to plant a church. Like, would you want to be part of trying to resurrect the dead or give birth? Hmm. Well, I have three kids. I know that's pretty messy too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
but there's two options, and we're just convinced no matter what you do with church, we're convinced that prayer has to be the foundation of it, because we can't plant anything and make it grow.
Yeah.
We can't resurrect anything for sure. And so if God doesn't do it, we don't want to be a part of it, kind of thing. So we just committed to, as we plant churches, we're going to pray our hearts out, pray our faces off, whatever you want to say, but prayer has to be the foundation. Because if God doesn't do it, like John 15:5 was taught to me by Stan Peters here at Briarcrest.
Yeah.
He was my mentor way back when, and it stuck with me, became my life verse.
Yeah.
I'm the vine, you're the branches, remain in me and I in you, you'll bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do
no thing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
In the Greek, that really means nothing. Zero, zilch, whatever you want to say, right?
In the Latin too.
In the Latin too, yeah, exactly. So we just, again, all these things, yeah. Why plant? How do you plant? Well, we pray hard that God's going to somehow raise up guys to do it.
Yeah.
Whoever he wants to do it, we're cool with that.
Yeah.
Because he's more creative than we are, for sure.
Yeah.
Drive in a neighborhood and you see all the same cookie cutter houses, you're like, oh, this builder kind of stinks. No creativity, right? God doesn't build churches cookie cutter. He's too creative. He does it all kinds of different ways, all kinds of different men, women, personalities. So we want to be a part of that. And church plan is not the only thing, but we want to see God move. We want to see God move.
I think there's a ton of revitalization that needs to happen, or replanting of churches, just like happened with you at Crosspoint.
Yeah, or turnaround churches. Yeah, yeah,
like,
for sure.
There's so many churches that are out there, but most of the churches are at the place where it doesn't hurt bad enough yet. Like it gets to, because I've met with lots of churches, hey, we want to replant, we want to do this, but they want to keep all the old stuff. Well, all the old stuff got them to exactly where they are. We got to do it completely differently and new, and you got to give up control. And that's the biggest thing.
There's a dying that needs to happen.
And if we could have that happen, like they died, you know, where you're at, the church that we're in right now, long-term Baptist church in Calgary, and they finally got to the place where it hurt bad enough. We're going to close down, but in our closing documents, we're going to have a church plant in here.
Yeah.
And so now the church that was dying for so long, now like there's a vibrant church in there that like we got 100 kids, like we're packed, and now we're going to go plant down in the south and leave this church, which is now thriving in the community, and go do another one. And then the beauty of church planting is they're going like, why are we doing this? Because it's going to make it really uncomfortable. Because now we got to raise up more leaders in our church to do what we're doing now, to go down there. And so it's forcing us to disciple instead of just get comfortable. Mm. And we were thinking of doing, like, should we do a second service? Well, during COVID, we did three services because we wanted to keep the doors open and we wanted to obey the government. So starting a service isn't a big deal that we found, because we could do it on the fly. But we thought that Calgary needs another gospel proclaiming church in the south, rather than we need another service to make it convenient for people to come to our church. And so that's kind of the, you know, we're talking about replanting and the.
So what does that mean for you, Johnny? Come on. What does that mean for you?
Well, it means that we've been asked to go be part of a church planting team down in the south of Calgary. And we've said yes. It was crazy. they asked us, and I thought, aren't
you too old, Johnny? You must be getting old up there. You're going to be a grandpa soon and all that stuff. Come on, man.
Going to be a grandpa. Yes. But we were, I rode it by my wife and thought she'd say no, and she got excited about it, and she's been pushing me, and again, I'm not 37 anymore when I planted my last church, and I think I've got some wisdom, and I don't have anything to prove other than I just want to see more people saved and another generation raised up. So that's what we're thinking. Going to be co-pastoring. Like, I've never co-led planted, so I don't know what that's going to like. So if anybody's on this podcast and they got some advice for me, I've got a wonderful pastor that we're working with. He's a great shepherd, and so we want to come together and use some of my apostolic gifting and his teaching and my teaching, and so I don't know how it's going to work, but I'm excited about it, and I really know that God is calling us to this. Mm. We're looking at a neighborhood in Calgary that's 20,000 people, never had a church there.
Yeah.
And so so we've been beginning to pray through that and say, God, what is it? And now we're just in the steps of just developing a core team and just calling people who wants to come.
Yeah. And that's mind boggling. Like Moose Jaw here it's been around forever. I mean, 35,000 people, population just doesn't change. And there's like probably 20 plus churches in Moose Jaw, right? I mean, it's so to think of a community of 20,000 with that few churches. I mean, that's mind-boggling when you think of it. Yeah. And so they have to go outside of the community to find a church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I think you guys have solved it. You've answered the question. Yeah. We got to do both. So you got a young person who comes to you and says, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to plant a church or not. Can you guide me? What would you say to them? How does a person know if they're supposed to plant a church?
I send them to Johnny. He has two coffees and a lunch, and he solves it for them.
Yeah.
We really encourage them to pray hard, to be honest. That goes back to prayer. Like, again, we all know you have to be called. We've all planted churches. We all know you can't do it. It's a glorious and most hardest thing you'll ever do at the same time. So we have them start praying. We start getting to know them and walking through the process of seeing who they are and what they're all about. And we have an assessment that we take all planters through. And it's not a small thing, but it's not over the top, but it's not small. Like, you really have to have clear evidence of God at work in you and God calling you and your wife at the same time.
Right, yeah.
She's not on board. It's not.
You can't do it by yourself. It doesn't work solo.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there's assessed in 9 different areas, and we walk them through all that. And again, trying to care for them. They come out of that with a green, go, yellow, we have some work to do, or red, we just don't sense that God is calling you to this. And so we're not God, we're not the Holy Spirit, and so have people failed and gone on to do great things? Absolutely. But we're just trying to discern the best way we know how to serve families, not just men, but families well, to help them find their sweet spot and find what God's calling them to. And then we're going to pour fuel on the fire of those that are we sense God's calling, and those that are not, we're going to help find where their real fit is in God's work, because there's a place for everybody in what God's doing.
So that's an assessment center, assessment weekend or whatever. Before they get there, I mean, do they have to have a sending church? Do they have to go through an application process?
There's an application process. There's references.
Yeah.
There's a sending church, absolutely. But the biggest thing before we get all that started is I want to hear the call.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I want to see tears in the eyes for the people where they're going to. I want to see they know where they're going. The God is calling them to do this. I remember when we planted, I'm probably the same as you guys, is because we wouldn't do this. And like, for us, it was like, if we wouldn't do this, this is sin.
Right.
Like, we have to, we cannot not do this, was what my wife said. Mm-hmm. And I always quote her on that. It's like, we cannot not do this. We don't know what we're doing yet, but we know we're called to do this. And in the assessment center, if you can't articulate a clear calling, you're not getting a green light.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That sounds very subjective, you know, like, I'm just kidding.
Johnny's like, what are you talking about? Threw him under the bus.
What if he's really stoic and he doesn't cry? Do you kick him under the table to make him cry?
They don't need to cry, but they need to have a passion for the lost. They need to have, like, this is what I'm called to do.
Yeah.
Not like I'm doing this because I need a steady job. Yeah, I need a steady job.
I give them
job.
Horseradish before they go to the meeting with Johnny, so they start tearing up, and I'm like, this will get you through, buddy. This will get you through.
Yeah, and a steady job. Like, this is you're not doing this because you want a job.
Yeah.
You don't want to do this because it's
or
easy.
Or glory.
Glory, and there's not a lot of good money in it. So it's go do something else. If they could do anything else, go do it.
Yeah, we have enough failed narcissists in the world today. We don't need them in the church.
I do think that's true, though. Like, 10 years ago, people, myself included, was like knocking on a door, and there was a little bit of like, hey, the Church plants are succeeding.
There was swagger, and that's when it became commodified,
that's
right?
That's what I'm saying.
So, like, everybody's going to the conferences
cool.
and drinking the Kool-Aid.
Oh, I want to be part of that. There's things happening, but I think we've now seen enough guys go into cities to take the cities, coming out in body bags.
Yeah, yeah.
People are more like, well, I don't know if I really want to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we throw the few unicorns up in front of everybody at a conference, and
but those
everybody's
are few
like,
and far
I want to be that.
Wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're unicorns. That's, yeah. You can't find a unicorn. They're hard to find, yeah.
Moose jaw?
Yeah, exactly, right? So, they go through assessment. They get the green, the yellow, the red. And then from there, so you said nine things. Like, give me a high point. Like, what are three or four of the things that are really crucial in that?
Yeah, their marriage, missional engagement, calling, vision, preaching.
So yeah, if they're not sharing the gospel today, why would you plant a church?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're asking those things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Okay.
Yeah, family dynamics, of course. Like Johnny said, all those things come into
emotional
play.
Emotional health.
Leadership ability.
Health. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, cracks become fissures.
Yeah,
so there's something going on in your life and you're not dealing with it. I mean, that's just going to explode when you plant the church.
And that stuff comes out at assessment, right? You know, we think he's grad, bring him to assessment, and all of a sudden, like, that didn't come out anywhere.
Yeah.
And then we've had times where people have gotten, like, really made some changes, got some healing.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, and that's where the yellow light comes in. It's kind of hitting a pause and then saying, let's work on these things and then let's go through this again.
And let's walk with you. And that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk with these guys. Like, let's help you get, whether you church plant or not, you're going to be an effective, more effective person in the kingdom because we're kingdom first, right? It's not about just church planting. It's about kingdom. It's about the gospel.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to be frank, there is a funding that's involved in it as well. And so you want to invest your funding in people that are going to be most effective as well. There's a stewardship aspect to it, right? And then you don't want to talk about it. That's not just why you're doing it. But I mean, you have an accountability to donors, to your organization, to your leaders and whatnot. And there used to be a time where we would just say, oh, you want to plant a church? Go for it, right? And the failure rate was just so high. I mean, it still is pretty high. Like it's not 100% success rate at all.
No.
But, I think the first step for a young leader, you would say, is pray. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And we're not looking for perfect planters, just to clarify.
Unicorns. Yeah.
You're not looking for perfect planters. Like, they're not out there. I'm not. You wouldn't have planted a church.
No. Exactly.
Johnny wouldn't have planted
Johnny's
a church.
Johnny's close, you know.
Johnny's closer than both of us, but he's still a little ways away. Still a little ways away.
But it's that character that we're looking for. Like, you can teach a guy how to preach.
Yeah.
You can teach some biblical doctrine, you can teach ecclesiology, but you can't really teach character.
Yeah, and character trumps competency.
Absolutely.
All the time, every
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, this humble leaders, like I had a leader that was, you know, he was younger, unmarried, and he needed to plant a church yesterday. Hmm. And just meeting with him, and now, and it's like, you know, he's in his 30s, has a child, and doesn't know if he's ready. Hmm. And I go, now you're starting to get ready.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like a lot of, you know, humility under our belt.
Yeah.
And in a sense that sense of like that we can't do it. Like back to what Daryl said of John 15:5, like we can't do it by ourselves. We need the Holy Spirit.
Now, you don't send out like a 22-year-old right out of Bible college out to plant a church, do you?
Well, that was my next comment. Yes. Okay. No. For
only
sure
if
not.
He's a Rob Chartrand.
Well, yeah, we would send him out with a church planter to help plant a church because every church planter
needs a team.
Is praying for some of those Bible college trained, enthusiastic, got fire in the belly, like, let's go out and make a difference. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'd send him out with a church planter, but we love to see guys with some pastoral experience, some church planting experience. So, again, some leaders over them that can vouch for them, that can say, hey, this guy served well in this capacity, and someone over here saying he's served well in this capacity. And we're not, it's not just us. We want to take the whole into account. And so, definitely not 22, but again, we also, there's a guy out there ready to go. We're not going to say, there is a Rob Chartrand ready to go. Yeah, right. Someone like,
when I was 22, I was learning to do laundry, pay the rent, and fry eggs. I mean, come on. Like,
where do the coins go again? Remember those days? Where do the coins go?
Yes. But again, guys are saying that church planting has gone from fishing to farming, whereas there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. Hey, we just got to put, you know, fish, we find the guys that are out there. And they're not out there anymore.
No.
And so it's to farming. And that's why we're at Briarcrest. Like, how do we back up? Like, if we want to have a vibrant church planting pipeline in 10 years, we got to be here now talking to the 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we can begin to build that relationship and then get them involved and go, how do we help you develop and to be the church planter that God's calling you to be? So not just throw them in the deep end, but let them come into a residency yep. and spend time with a gifted seasoned pastor where they can learn without getting beat up
yeah.
and being protected, but learn. And when they're ready to be sent out.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like the gospel in the sense that you're sowing seeds of church planting in the hearts and minds of young people yeah. to consider it. And then one day those could germinate. I mean, I didn't hear about church planting until I was like in my mid 20s, and I didn't plant a church until I was 38. But in my mid 20s, I thought about it. I thought, oh, maybe one day God would want me to plant a church. Yeah. You know, maybe that might be it. And so some of our listeners would be maybe pleased to know we're going to take a whole group of Bible school students out for pizza tonight and just have a conversation about church planting. And no offer to go plant a church tomorrow, but just to sow seeds of saying, you know, what if God and you and some friends were to be part of a church planting team, or maybe some of you would plant churches down the road? And just talking about that. Is that a fair assessment we're going to talk about, Daryl?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And more than anything, like, what does God want to do with your life? And how does God want you to engage your life for the gospel?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you end up becoming a church planter or not, let's start thinking about how you can leverage whatever your gifts are, wherever yeah. God calls you, for the glory of Jesus. And if we can plant some seeds, and there's some solid students we met that are coming tonight, so we're yeah. pretty excited. But if Amen. We said, even if three of those come to fruition in 10 years, three of those are planting churches, like, this is a successful trip.
Yeah, yeah.
This is
absolutely. Even right? if there's one, I mean, but yeah,
we're going three, Rob. We're yeah. going three.
So what gives you hope for the church in Canada? I know we talked about, you know, the secularization of Canada and the pluralistic posture that's happening and post-Christian and all that. So what gives you hope for the church in Canada?
Jesus.
That was going to be my answer too. He stole it. He stole
it. School answer.
Yeah, yeah.
I will build my church.
I was going to say squirrel, but okay. So.
I will build my church.
Yeah.
I'm not. You're not.
Yeah.
Johnny's not going to build a church. Jesus is going to build his church, and the yeah. gates of hell will not prevail.
Yeah. Amen.
Over it. And so we put our hope in the fact that Jesus has been faithful to his word from the very beginning. He's never wavered yet.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he waver now? We might not see it. We might see stats about church in decline. I read those this past week too.
Sure.
And it might look dreary and dark and like, man, it's hopeless. It's over. It's never going to be over until the trumpet sounds and Jesus comes back. And
yeah.
so that's
we
our hope.
We win.
Yeah, I've seen. Yeah. We've seen the game. We tape. You know what I mean? We've seen
yeah,
the game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. We're just watching it on TVO now. There's the,
exactly
you know, rewinding it yeah. a little bit. Yeah.
And even places like Briarcrest that are still faithful to the mission, and there's as much as there's a lot of hopelessness, there's a lot of hope of there's still men and women who love Jesus, who are faithful to the mission, who are being faithful. God didn't call us to be fruitful. He didn't say, well done, good and fruitful servant. I know it's a cliche, but it's not really a cliche. It's biblical. He said, yeah. well done, good and faithful servant. And so there's faithful people still doing what we're called to do. We might not see the tangible results. We might not see all the glory stories that we want, but we're just being faithful and God's going to do what he's going to do. And we yeah. talked about it on the way here too, Johnny and I, that over history, there's hundreds of years, sometimes thousands of years, where it seemed like God didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
he still did.
Mm-hmm.
And he still was working, even though you don't see him working.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so yeah. we believe he's working. And we believe he's going to do what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And we're going to see one day all the tangible results. And so we just walk by faith and not by sight. And man, yeah. some days it's scary. Some days you don't see too far in front of you, but we're just going to continue to do what yeah. we're called to do and see what God does.
Yeah, it's good.
With the woke culture and just even being here this week and just seeing Briarcrest's desire and commitment to the Word of God and to proclaiming the Word of God and not changing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that is huge. And because a lot of it, we talked to some institutions that have gotten weak on the Word
yeah.
and where that leads. And so I'm hopeful because an institution like Briarcrest, which is so huge in Canada, has yeah. that standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me hope that It's not all lot. God's
yeah.
he still has his church, and he still is in the business of redeeming people.
Yeah,
and so that's the hope that I have here.
Yeah, Canada. That's great. And just for our listeners, I didn't tell them to say that.
He did, man. He's holding like this threat before us. No, the other thing too is reality yeah. is there was almost 40 churches planted in Canada by SEND across Canada last year.
Wow.
And so maybe they're not the big flashy with all the lights and the bells and whistles. You're not making the major headlines.
Yeah.
But God is still at work,
mm-hmm.
and he's still doing his thing, one church plant at a time, one life at a time. And
yeah.
And
well, there are no big flashy churches in mainland China, but Jesus is using them to
win the nation. That's coming up in class tomorrow. That's one of my things I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, hey, why don't we finish with you guys sharing a final word of encouragement with our listeners? I mean, we think about all the ministry leaders across Canada who are paying attention to what you guys are saying right now. How could you encourage them?
To me, just be encouraged because Jesus is on the throne. Mm-hmm. It's not about, again, it's not about our fruitfulness, it's about the faithfulness. Yeah. You know, you look at the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11, and they didn't see what we can see today. And so again, the guy's not to give up when it's hard, when it's not working, when you want to give up. It's like, no, don't give up. Reach out to a brother, reach out to you on this pod, like whoever, like reach out to someone and go, man, I want to give up, but don't give up.
Yeah.
Like I know I've been at this, you know, in ministry for some 30 some years now, and the amount of guys that have flamed out.
Yeah.
That I went to college with or were in seminary with, like it's sad. And, and it's not an easy game. Like I take 2 Timothy 4:7 seriously. Like I fought the good fight.
Yeah.
I finished the race, kept the faith. Mm. And I would just say like, that's the call, especially those guys in our 50s. Like we got to keep the faith. We got to, the finish line's there, but let's keep going. Let's not give up and go easy. Like let's keep in the game. Let's keep in the fight. Like don't waste your life. Like, like we're talking about at the end, like, you know, what's retirement? Like it's, you know, it's going to the end. Retirement's heaven.
Don't trip in the last 20 meters.
Exactly.
Yeah. Daryl.
Yeah. Well said. I would maybe say what I said in chapel, the end of chapel this morning with, be you. Mm-hmm. Just invest your gifts and skills and keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. Be available, be aware of what God is doing and just say, God, here I am. I'm surrendered. I'll be available to what you want me to do. Be on mission. Can't lose the mission. I am amazed the fact that so many people are coming to Canada. Our population is growing, yet Christianity seems to be shrinking. So that just means the opportunity is greater here.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, you just have to go outside your front door now and you can engage the nations, which is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Look at the opportunities before you, be on mission, and then be amazed at what God's going to do. I think sometimes we live our lives in ministry, on mission, but we're not expecting God to do anything. Mm. Well, God promised he's going to do something. He's given us power, the power of the Holy Spirit to accomplish his purposes. Mm. And so be amazed one life at a time of what God is doing in and through your life.
Yep.
And hold on to Jesus. Like it is a journey, man. There's ups and downs and all arounds. And we've been at the top. We've kissed pavement too. You know what I mean? And sat there for a few months sometimes and God's faithful.
Yeah.
Amen.
God
Amen.
Has brought us from the mountaintops when we're maybe getting too high. He keeps us grounded. And when we get too low, he pulls us up. And so the steady reality of it all is Jesus promised he'll never leave you or forsake you. Hmm. And all we have to do is endure till the end.
Yeah.
Endure till the end. And he's even going to do that because he promises that too, right?
Yeah.
He'll get us to the end. So.
Yeah. Good. Good word. Good word. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us on Church in the North.
Great to be here.
Yeah, so good to have you.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. You've been listening to the Church in the North podcast, a production of Briarcrest College and Seminary. For more information about the podcast, visit churchinthenorth.ca. To learn more about Briarcrest, visit briarcrest.ca. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard today, please share this episode with other ministry leaders.